gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I am your host, Ken Molman, and just watching the Masters here in the background, so don't mind me. It's just gone to a playoff here. But you are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. We've got quite a bit on the agenda tonight, but if you'd like to call in, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And if you want to speak, once you call in, be sure to hit that one key so I know that you want to speak. So we're supposed to get a call here tonight from Katie from the Industrial Hemp Museum. We're waiting to hear from her. I talked to her yesterday and kind of got things lined up, but have not been able to reach her today. So hopefully she will call in. But we've got plenty of other things to talk about tonight, so we'll go ahead and get started on those. In some local news that's going to affect all of Kentucky, the library tax lawsuits that have been going on up here in northern Kentucky, the first one came down Campbell County. We had that for you last week on the show. The Kenton County suit that was filed similarly in another court, obviously in Kenton County, came down exactly the same. And just as a reminder, what that means is that the libraries were not supposed to be raising their taxes using the compensating rate rule, which is, when used properly, basically ensures that a local taxing entity doesn't bring in more than 4% of its revenue, 4% more revenue than it brought in the year before, without giving voters the ability to take that to a vote. That's the rule that most taxing entities run by here in the state. But with Kenton County, Campbell County, these libraries have a separate section of KRS, Kentucky Revised Statutes, that specifies in their instances that they're supposed to get a petition with a number of signatures of registered voters numbering no fewer than a number of 50% of the number of people who voted in the last general election. So for Campbell County, I did the math on it, that's a petition with just over 20,000 signatures. Just call it 20,200 to be safe. It's 20,100 and change signatures. And there are actually 60,000 voters in Campbell County. So basically they need the signatures of about one-third of the registered voters in Campbell County. And then that tax increase is automatic. It doesn't go to a ballot. It just happens. That is today's law, and that is the law that the judge has just ruled should have been how they were operating. The Kenton County Library is the same way. Some of the other libraries around the state were formed by ballot rather than by petition, and in those instances, they have to collect 100 signatures, or the library board or fiscal court has to put the issue on the ballot, and the voters get to decide whether or not to change that tax rate. And that is, in Kentucky law, the petitioning requirements in KRS 173.790, if you're interested in looking that up, you can do so at lrc.ky.gov. That's LRC, Legislative Resource Commission, or Research Commission, excuse me, Legislative Research Commission, lrc.ky.gov. And you can look that up there under Kentucky law. It's under Section 173. And it's pretty explicit there, and that's what the judges both ruled. And so this is going to have a pretty big effect around the state, as most libraries have been abusing that or assuming that they were operating under the compensating rate rule and not under the section of law that's right there. This has been considered a Tea Party effort, and I think that that's incorrect. In Campbell County, two of the plaintiffs were Tea Partiers, but one of them, the lead plaintiff, was not. And it's really something for all taxpayers in the counties that this happens in. They can get a refund of some sort from the libraries for excessive taxation and can also will get their rates reduced across the board. And it was done as a class action lawsuit against the libraries in those counties. So that's going to have broad a broad effect on the library's taxation around the state for every county in the state, basically, with exception to maybe Louisville. And so be on the lookout. I suspect that there will be more and more lawsuits that will be fired up. I know Boone County is fired up now. I've heard of a number of counties that are looking to fire these up. The only thing I would ask folks, and I know that in Montgomery County this has been done, the folks in Montgomery County have gone to the library board and written them a letter and actually published it in the paper as well, basically asking the library board to voluntarily lower their rate back to where it should be to avoid litigation. So basically the folks that have been arguing with the library for some time are providing a means for the library to fix their issue without having to litigate this thing in court. And that's a better way to do it if they're willing to do it. But what we have found is that a lot of these library boards are very arrogant. They're appointed from down in Frankfurt. They're not elected by anyone local. And so they feel they're invincible and can do whatever they want. And that's kind of what led to the whole situation in Campbell County and in Kenton County. Hopefully now with these two rulings behind us, the library boards and the rest of the state will be more willing to discuss these issues rather than to just blow them off. Let's see here. I also found a very interesting graph, and I had found this before in a conversation earlier. This is jumping topics, I apologize. Completely different subject, talking about the cliffs in our social welfare system. And it's very, very interesting, the places where you lose benefits based on reaching a certain threshold, you actually take an overall net drop. And these create disincentives for people to get off of social welfare programs. So at, for instance, $9,000 to $10,000 income, at $10,000, or excuse me, at $9,000 with all benefits combined, a person is raking in about $53,000 worth of benefits, wages, everything combined. At $10,000, that drops back down to about $50,000. So you lose $3,000 worth of benefits, which is not the biggest cliff, but that's the first one. The biggest cliff happens right at $29,000, where at $29,000, you get a total, including wages and benefits and everything else, of approximately $57,000 in net income and benefits. And with the drops that occur there and afterwards, you have to reach an income level of $69,000 annually to make up for the drop-off. That's a pretty significant spacing there, $29,000 to $69,000. So unless you're getting a raise at the $29,000 level up to $69,000, you're taking essentially a pay cut adjusted for everything that you would get for having a lower income. So it's an interesting discussion topic, and it's one that I've looked at in the past and been kind of interested about, because if we're going to use a system like welfare to help people, and I say if, we're going to do that, the system should be encouraging people to get ahead. And these cliffs actually encourage people to stay behind. I've talked to a number of folks that due to illnesses or disabilities are unable to get ahead because they lose certain benefits. And the benefits they lose are so significant that they would never be able to survive. And it's really a frustration point for me that, we've got social welfare benefits to help people get on their feet. If you want to take that, that's fine. But when the system itself actually acts as a barrier and it hurts people to get ahead, then you're acting counter to the whole purpose or supposed purpose of those social welfare programs. If you're going to help people, then benefits should taper off, not drop off like a cliff. They should taper off slowly to the point where it all kind of comes together and meets, and you're always getting ahead. There should always be that incentive, that drive to get ahead. There should never be a time when, because I make $1 more, I all of a sudden actually make $10,000 less. I mean, that's crazy. And I think everyone would agree with that. And that is an inherent problem in our system. So we can argue about should we have these things, should we be providing these social welfare benefits and the particular welfare benefits and whatnot. We can argue that. But I think we can all agree that if we're going to have them, that they should at least encourage people to move up the ladder, up the financial ladder, to get off of them. I think that's an end goal of every person. We don't want to have people on welfare. You know, the idea behind welfare was to provide the ability to survive instead of, you know, starving in the streets. So let's have a conversation about how do we fix this system? How do we encourage people to move ahead rather than suffer those drop-offs in benefits? And actually, you know, if we're going to help people, let's help people, not keep them down by making it impossible to cross over a certain threshold in income. That's crazy. I think that's a pretty common sense approach. And I'll post that picture up on the for those of you that aren't on the Facebook page, listen to the show. You can find us on Facebook. If you get on Facebook and search for Liberty Unbridled, you can find us there. And be sure to like us when you get on there. It's funny, we have a lot more listeners than we have fans on Facebook. And really, the primary way we advertise the show is on Facebook, which I always find kind of interesting. But I am posting a picture, that picture I was talking about just now, on Facebook right now. So if you're online, you can take a peek at that either after the show or, well, right now if you want to. But we're going to move on because we have plenty of things to talk about. Let's see here. The gun control debate has been heating back up, and it was almost dead about a month ago. It pretty much was gone, and now the drumbeat for universal background checks has begun. And, you know, on its face, hey, you know what? A background check sounds like a common sense measure, and that's why you'll see there is a lot of support for a background check. And, of course, those pushing this are calling it the universal background check, and that sounds good, but the devil is always in the details. This background check is not just a background check. And in fact, it goes so far that, and I think we discussed this last week, that the ACLU has come out against the background checks. They've said that they're too invasive, that the required data sharing, the information sharing, violates privacy, and that the program itself is, if it is not registration itself, then it is only one step away from registration. And so for those reasons, the ACLU actually opposes the Senate bill as proposed. The issue, you know, keeps popping up in other interesting places. You know, Connecticut just passed a very heavy-duty gun control bill there in the state. And as a result, companies that make firearms have been moving out of the state. I just saw another story on WFSB.com that some company called PTR, I don't know who that is, but PTR is another company that will be leaving the state of Connecticut as a result of their gun ban. We talked about this last week, that Rick Perry from Texas had reached out to all the firearms manufacturers in Connecticut when that law was going through, and reached out to them and said, hey, come to Texas. And I posed the question, and I don't have the answer, but I sure hope it's yes, but I haven't heard anything. Did Steve Beshear do the same thing? Did he reach out to these companies and say, hey, come to Kentucky, open up your doors here? Because we certainly aren't suffering from too many jobs here in the state of Kentucky, where, as we reported a week or two ago, one in five people, 20% of our population, is on food stamps. Certainly, we could use more jobs in Kentucky, and hopefully Steve Beshear has reached out to those companies. As if there's one thing that pretty much everyone in Kentucky agrees on, if there's one right that Kentucky agrees upon, it's the Second Amendment. And speaking of the Second Amendment, we had the big Knob Creek machine gun shoot this past weekend. That was I haven't heard any stories or anything as far as how crowded it was, but I would suspect that given all the talk about gun control and everything going on, I would suspect that they had a larger than normal crowd down there. And, if you went to the gun shoot and you want to call in and tell us about it, you can do so. Again, the number here, 858-683-1326. Related to the gun control story, there's a Texas prosecutor that is an anti-gun prosecutor who has arrested a soldier. This was reported on dailycaller.com. Basically, someone called in a complaint, and they arrested him for causing a panic for legally carrying a firearm hunting. It's a legal firearm. It was legal for him to carry it. And the officer arrested him for not turning over his firearms when requested. The person who was arrested was a soldier, and apparently the soldier asked, you know, why he needed to turn it in, and, you know, asking questions of the police. Well, that's a problem, obviously. So as a result, the soldier was arrested, and the reason given was that they were creating a quote unquote panic by carrying that firearm. And I was pretty sure that this issue had been decided. I thought that the courts had decided that, you know, exercising your rights was not a cause for a panic. And I'm very interested to see. I suspect this prosecutor is going to lose this case and he's going to get run out of town on a rail, but because apparently his constituency in the area that he serves over is very pro-gun as well. So this guy is probably not going to make it another term. But apparently this guy is on board with the whole registration and bandwagon as well. So it's very interesting to kind of watch that. And then more nationally, John Boehner came out and apparently is talking about gun control, the compromise. Everybody's heard about the compromise. You know, Rand Paul and some of the other senators tried to do a filibuster. And it was pointed out that there was also one Democrat involved in that filibuster as well. So there was a group that tried to filibuster the bill. Unfortunately, all but one Democrat and a large number of Republicans would not go along with the filibuster. They did the vote to end the filibuster and begin debate. Senator Pat Toomey out of Pennsylvania has been working on a quote-unquote compromise. And I don't know the details of that compromise. I don't know that anybody knows the details of that compromise at this point. But what's interesting is John Boehner is apparently on board with this compromise. And when asked, he was said that he didn't need the GOP members of the House to pass the gun legislation. And apparently this is the same kind of mindset that he dealt with the fiscal cliff negotiations that led to the attempted coup on him remaining House Speaker. And not very wise politically for Boehner to come out for this measure, and especially in such a way that it's bound to upset a number of the Republican base that are, his base of support. I mean, you're going to see probably more people calling for Boehner's head on a pike, figuratively, of course, from him making more statements like this. It's just not real smart politics. And, the bill, we've discussed this on the show several times now, the bill is not a good bill. It's backdoor registration, just like the ACLU says. And the ACLU is not one to usually come out in when it comes to the Second Amendment. They usually keep their mouth shut. And in fact, they aren't even speaking about the Second Amendment in particular, but the other side effects that affect privacy. And I mean, that's pretty bold for the ACLU to come out and make that statement. So, this gun control measure, this universal background check, while it sounds all flowery and sweet, is not good, and it's not one that we want to see go through. It's not one that we want to have. You want to have a background check? Fine. I'm not opposed to a background check either, but you better have it so that there's defined clearly in the law. Don't leave it to the bureaucracy. Define it clearly in the law what it is that will cause you to fail a background check. It better say you know, this. Do not leave it up to the bureaucracy to decide. We've seen what happens when you leave language vague and let the bureaucracy decide. The bureaucracy always goes after more. They always grow. They always extend the criteria. Because at the end of the day, bureaucracies have two functions: protect their turf and expand their turf. That's all they do. That's all bureaucracy does. It protects what they already control and looks to take over more. So if you do not put a cap on that bureaucracy and a cap on or limit the length to which they can go, they're going to take as much as they can. We've seen that with the EPA. We've seen that with lots of things nationally, in the state and locally. You see these bureaucracies, they always take more. So you've got to put a cap on it. That's number one. Number two, and probably just as important, if not more so, is that any background check that's run, there needs to be some time limit in it, whether it's a week, 2 weeks, or a month, but some relatively short period of time, after which the data is to be destroyed. Now, right now, the bill claims, or the bill actually requires, rather, the data that is collected on each person who does the background check to be shared with other agencies. That's not good. We should be going the other direction. If a background check's to be done, the data should be collected, examined, and once it's a yes or no, if it's a yes, you send back yes, you're good to go, and that data is not really needed any longer. And so at that point, it should be ready to be destroyed, and that's what it should be. It should be destroyed so as to prevent a backdoor registration process. We've discussed that on the show before. Any data that's kept around, you can look and see and find out if the person has run a background check, and if they have, well, then, boom, there's your database, right? You get a list of all the people who have run such a background check, and, hey, now you know everybody owns a firearm. Likewise, it should be a felony to fail to do so, to destroy that data. The data should not be allowed to be shared anywhere. And if one more provision that's probably important but not as important as the first two should be, if you fail a background check, you should have an appeal process so that if data is collected in error, you can, you know, protect your rights and get the due process in that whole thing. So this gun control thing is kind of a mess. I'm kind of watching and waiting to see how they mess this up, because they probably will. It sounds like the Republicans are already prepared to cave, even though, you know, I believe they really have the high ground on this. And so it's going to be interesting to see what they do. I guess I'm going to take an early break. I've got another thing to tie into the Republicans, but, you know, it's going to take longer than 5 minutes. So I'm going to take the break now here at the bottom of the hour. If you'd like to call in about this or any of the other topics listed on the other side of the break, you can do so by calling area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. The chat room is open as well. I'm going to check in there during the break. And other than that, we'll get back to this here in just a few minutes on the My View Matters Radio Network.
being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back here on the My View Matters radio network. This is the Liberty Unbridled Show. We're here every Sunday night, and the other shows on the network are on at 7 p.m. Monday through Thursday. So you can catch us Sunday through Thursday here on the network at 7 p.m. And I do encourage you to listen to the other shows. They're good as well. So anyway, getting back to it here, we were talking about Boehner and don't need the GOP and the just kind of GOP stuff. Speaking of, the Republican National Committee held their meeting here this week, and there was an attempt in the Rules Committee to roll back these new 2012 rules that basically cut the grassroots out of the equation when dealing with the Republican Party. That attempt in the Rules Committee failed, and actually there were some that wanted to go even further and get rid of all these caucuses that occur. And for those that don't know, the caucuses are a way that the parties in those individual states make a lot of their money, and they're kind of a weird process for us here in Kentucky who don't do such things. But essentially they are a way for grassroots activists to get involved in their state party and their local parties. And they tried to roll back, and it failed. And so there was talk about trying to get this done on Friday. I've seen absolutely no news, which no news tells me they did not succeed in getting that going. The only news I've seen out of the RNC meeting was that they did reaffirm their position on marriage. I saw that on a blog at CNN's website. And I assume that the reaffirmation is that marriage is only one man, one woman, and that's that. And that's not going to go over well in the long term. But, you know, whatever. That's their party, not mine. So speaking of people controlling your life and telling you what you can and can't do, there was a story this week about an MSNBC anchor, Melissa Harris Perry, who basically says that in one of those MSNBC Lean Forward commercials is talking about how public education needs funds and we need to invest in public education. The reasoning behind it, though, was more troubling. She basically said that we need to move away from the mindset that children belong to their parents and that children are communal property, that their well-being has to do with the overall social benefit needs to be weighed in there or whatever. And that's the scary thing about this is that the Republicans who are pushing the marriage issue, they'll push it because it's tradition. They'll push it because it's what's good for society. They'll push it for a number of reasons. But when you start talking about common good, collective good, it opens the doors to other problems, to other issues, to other concerns like this, where you have people literally advocating that children are not the responsibility of their parents, but the responsibility of the entire community or the entire group or whatever, the nation, and that they belong to the nation, not to parents. When you get into social engineering, when you get away from looking at people as individuals and you take autonomy away from individuals and away from individuals in a family unit, and you start having government involved and you ask government to define what is right and what is wrong and what's allowed and what's disallowed, this is the situation you end up with, right? And likewise from the other direction, you know, when you start talking about banning smoking, which is always a hot topic of mine, for public good and public health, Well, you know, the Republicans will say that keeping marriage between a man and a woman is for the same reasons. It's the same line of thought. It's the same thinking. It's collectivism. It's what's good for society, not even taking into account what is right or what the individual wants or needs. That's the real problem with this mindset. And we really need to do a better job of making people understand that it's not just about, hey, it's not fair, right? When you hear the gay marriage issue, oh, it's not fair that, you know, gays can't get married. Well, I tend to agree it's not fair. I think it's silly that government creates a what is essentially a fast lane for a man and a woman who want to join assets, but not for any other scenario. Yeah, it's not fair. But what's more important there is the reasoning behind it. It's that collectivism. It's the, well, this is good for society, whereas your relationship, we've deemed it not good for society, so we penalize you. That's not good. That's not a good line of thinking. And likewise, when you start talking about taking kids out of the control of their parents and taking control of how to raise kids away from their parents, that's horrible. I mean, it's the same mindset, though. It's the same, we need to make sure we create automatons and we may make sure that society runs a certain way and that individual choices are taken away and that the approved choices are all that you have. It's all collectivism. It's bad. And so you got to see there's collectivism on both sides, Republican and Democrat, left and right. And that's the real enemy in our fight for liberty is collectivism. Collectivism as is the antithesis of individualism. Individualism is all about voluntary interaction between individuals. That's what we want. It's my life. I'm an adult. I get to choose what I do with my life. And if I choose to involve you in my life and you choose to involve yourself in my life and vice versa and whatnot, then we should be free to do so with no interference or interruption from anyone else. Who else's business is it? Really? It's all about individuals. And that's really the lesson coming out of all of this is that you have those on the right that want to control certain choices, those on the left that want to control certain choices. I don't want to control any of your choices. Hey, whether you're an adult or whether you're competent or not, that's on you, right? You're an adult. And if you're a legal adult, the decisions you make are on you, and the consequences of those decisions are on you. That's the point. You have to live for yourself. You are the only person who knows you well enough to make decisions for you. That's really what it boils down to. No one else knows you like you. And so that's, I guess, the point. You know, we have to get away from this collectivist thinking. We have to recognize it when it's coming from Republicans or coming from Democrats. Collectivism is bad. So speaking of things that are bad, I meant to get this at the beginning of the show. The IRS this week has come out and said that they have the power to read your email, Facebook, any other social interaction online. If it's online, they claim they can get it without a warrant, that they don't need a warrant to pry into your private life to prove whether or not you might be cheating on your taxes or whatever. This is obviously a violation of Fourth Amendment rights. There's no due process involved where they can just snoop. You know, Facebook, okay, well, that's kind of public, right? Twitter, that's public, okay? You know, that's no different than saying things, you know, yelling from your front porch, and if somebody happens to be listening, then so be it. But when you start talking about reading people's email, I have a serious problem with that. Email is supposed to be private. You know, that's like a conversation between two people behind closed doors. Yeah, it's not really behind closed doors, but electronically it is. It's not broadcast to the world. It's broadcast between two individuals or some group of individuals, intentionally so. And it has a two list, and it's from somebody else, and it's supposed to be a private interaction. And, you know, we talked about last week how the FBI – is monitoring emails and is supposed to be or wants to get more direct access to Gmail because they use SSL, secure socket layer, behind the scenes, it's harder to do real-time monitoring of email, and that's something that they want. So, you know, that's these are infringements on our Fourth Amendment right to privacy. It's not really privacy, but due process and what is essentially the right to privacy that was kind of quasi-created. But in spirit, it is the right to privacy. It is being secure in my effects, right? I should not have to be worried that someone is snooping on me in my home. And it's very interesting because the Supreme Court, as we reported last week, basically has been making some rulings in regard to this, that indeed they can't do things like bring drug sniffing dogs and encircle your house around your property without your permission. There are things that you can't do, and I would think that email would fall under this, that you know, your email should be secure from anyone not on the recipient list, unless, of course, someone on that recipient list forwards it on. I mean, that's always a possibility, and really it's no different than, you know, repeating what someone says or, you know, recording a conversation in public and relaying it again. You know, that's different, but when someone who is a what do they call that, a third party to the conversation, claims that they have the right to interfere or to get involved in that private conversation, well, isn't that exactly what was going on with this whole Mitch McConnell thing this past week with the bugging and everything? Wasn't that the whole deal that, you know, the people in the room had no idea they were being recorded? And that's against the law. I mean, in Kentucky, one party, one participant can record without the consent of the other participant or participants in the conversation. But when the person doing the recording is not a participant in the conversation, that is illegal. And it should be illegal. And the IRS claiming to have the ability to monitor your email is no different. That email wasn't sent to the IRS. That email was sent from me to you or you to somebody else, whoever. But, you know, I didn't see the IRS on the CC list there. I didn't see the IRS as a recipient. They do not have the right or should not have the right to read emails that were not directly addressed to them. Unless they go and get a court order and due process, you know, through the due process, with due process. If they have due process, sure, they can subpoena anything they want. But they need to get a warrant. They can't just do it. And that's a very big deal. And so we're going to keep following this as it happens. I'm hoping that this is not the last that we've heard or will hear about this story. I'd like to find out one way or the other. And I'd like to see, personally, that the IRS is told, no, you can't read private communications. You can read public ones, but not private communications. On a completely different topic, Bitcoin was hit an all-time high, and I can't remember what it was, but it was something like $200 per Bitcoin. It was over $200 per Bitcoin. And then a few days ago dropped drastically, very drastically. And there was talk that perhaps there had been some pump and dump involved in that, where someone had intentionally, artificially inflated the price of Bitcoin once it started going up. And it started going up when the Cypress thing started getting ugly. There was talk that perhaps there was some intentional manipulation of that market. And I don't know if that's going to go very far or not. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if it was intentional from those who have been kind of naysaying it, especially from you know, the government side, where the government is really not happy about this second competitive currency floating around in the United States. You know, this is actually here in recent times really started to pick up quite a bit of steam to the point where actually I believe, the National Libertarian Party at this point. I don't know if it's set up yet or not, but there's talk that they're going to accept bitcoins as a mechanism of donating to the party. So this thing's taken off, and I think that a very big part of this is I can't help but think that this was a pump and dump. Now, whether it was the government doing it to discredit it or someone trying to intentionally harm it, or if it was just straight-up scammers that were out there, had a good number of them, pumped up, you know, with supply and demand. And with Bitcoin, there's a supply thing, right, that kind of makes it so that there's a limited supply of Bitcoins. So if you drive up the price on the last few Bitcoins that are out there, intentionally drive up the price, but you've got a whole bunch, you know, stored away, you drive that price up and then you dump. And that may very well be what we've just seen. Now, that said, I think that what will happen is the market will kind of self-regulate, if you will, and it'll come back. It'll probably bounce back to some other price or whatever. But, you know, just be careful out there, folks. You know, if you're getting involved in this stuff, any commodity can, and even a virtual commodity that has nothing, can be run up and then drop back down. So make sure that when you're making investments or investments for the long term, you know, that's my advice on that front. But it's very interesting. I mean, we've seen this in history before where people have manipulated markets much larger. There was a historic pump and dump of gold. I want to say it was around the turn of the 19th century. It's escaping me the exact date. But that was a historic example of where, you know, gold was run up and then dumped. And so it can happen with anything. And it's very important to just, you know, make sure you're diversified and make sure you're covered. I'm not a financial advisor by any means, so, you know, don't listen to me on that kind of stuff. But, you know, just in the general sense, make sure you've looked into stuff and got your assets protected. So with about 15 minutes left in the show, something I didn't get to last week, I wanted to get to this. I found an article from late March titled 60 completely outrageous ways the U.S. government is wasting money. And I've read through this list, and there are some that I don't think it's completely outrageous for some of these, but certainly in an era where we're $16 trillion in debt, running over $1 trillion in deficits every year, certainly there is a very good case to be made that the majority, if not all of these, are things that should be cut or stopped, at least temporarily, until the budget, until we're rolling in dough, it might be a good idea to scale back on these. You know, interesting things. I mean, some of this is interesting. Some of it's just silly. We talked about this one here, the IRS spending $60,000 to film a parody of Star Trek and that parody of Gilligan's Island. And it was done for to create training videos for the IRS. The National Science Foundation gave Yale University almost $400,000 to do a study on sexual conflict, social behavior, and the evolution of waterfowl genitalia. And basically, it is measuring the reproductive organs of male ducks. The National Institute of Health gave $1.5 million to Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston to study why, quote, three-quarters, unquote, of lesbians in the U.S. are overweight and why most gay males are not. Might be interesting, but, you know, right now, probably not one of the hot plate issues out there. Let's see, you know, related $2.7 million given to the from the National Institutes of Health to find out why lesbians are more vulnerable to hazardous drinking. Of course, everybody heard about the U.S. government giving the F-16s and tanks to the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. Let's see here. Yeah, Sorry, I should have marked this up with a highlighter rather than just having this like this. But let's see, $25,000 spent on a promotional tour of the Alabama Watermelon Queen. $505,000 to promote specialty hair and beauty products for cats and dogs. $1 million a year developing food for a manned mission to Mars, even though we don't have a shuttle anymore. $15 million to help Russian weapons institutes recruit nuclear scientists. $5.25 million spent on health care, or excuse me, hair care for the last 15 years for the U.S. Senate. $27 million to teach Moroccans how to design and make pottery in 2012. I mean, this list goes on and on and on and on and on. And you know, there's some of this stuff that's kind of interesting. Some of this is just ridiculous. You know, things like Joe Biden took a trip to London back in February. The hotel bill cost $459,000. A stop for one night in Paris cost $585,000. You know, things that are just kind of ridiculous. And I guess the point is that, you know, there's a lot of talk lately. I saw something from Rubio here recently where he said that the problems with the U.S. government, with the spending and whatnot, could not be solved simply by cutting budgets, that basically inferring that tax increases were going to have to be part of the equation. And I tend to at least initially disagree. I mean, until we cut out all the frivolous spending and the things that are not the must-haves but the wants and the sillinesses, until all those are cut, isn't it a little bit early to be talking about tax increases? I mean, shouldn't we be talking about cutting all the BS first and then see where we're at? And you know what? Hey, if we're still in the hole, you know, we really decided that these are priority items and they have to be done and there is no hope, there is no chance to get those things in line, well, then let's start talking about what else to do. But until you get rid of all this silly spending, millions of dollars, I mean, I'm sure this adds up to billions of dollars over the course of everything. Until all this is cut, isn't it a little bit early to be talking about tax increases or to be giving in on tax increases? Shouldn't we be talking about getting rid of all this frivolous spending? And certainly there are some big things that need to occur too that are going to be painful. You know, the Medicare Part D stuff with the prescription drugs for people on Medicare, you know, was not properly done. I mean, if you're going to give prescription medication away, you better set limits on that stuff. I mean, we've all heard the stories about the grandpas on Viagra. Well, that's not really what people had in mind when they were talking about, you know, prescription drugs for the elderly. They were talking about, hey, grandpa has this debilitating illness that if he doesn't get this medicine, he's going to die and he can't afford this medicine. That's far and away different than grandpa wants to get some Viagra and go hit Vegas for the weekend. You know, that's a big, big difference there. And so there are easy things to do. There are some things that are slightly painful to do. And then there are things that are very painful to do. And if nothing else, let's get rid of the easy first. Then let's start looking at the slightly painful and start cutting there. And once we've cut the really easy, once we've cut into the slightly painful, then let's have a serious conversation. Do we continue to cut or do we raise taxes? Do we finish out the stuff that's kind of painful and start moving into the really painful cuts? Or do we raise taxes? And I think that's a legitimate question to ask. I mean, I know what side I want to be on. I think we need to make those painful cuts, and I think we need to do that for the long-term viability of the country. And I think that it's wrong that we spend all this money and leave the debt behind for our children to pay, I find that morally reprehensible to do that. So at some point, the conversation needs to be had, and unfortunately, no one's having that conversation. One of the things I wanted to talk to Katie about tonight, you know, and I'm sure she probably wouldn't have commented on this particular thing, but, you know, for years here in Kentucky, we've heard about how David Williams, former Senator David Williams, and former gubernatorial candidate, now a judge, was the obstructionist to getting anything done in Frankfort, about how he was the guy that was grinding everything to a halt. Well, he's gone now. And what we saw, for instance, with the hemp bill, is that, yeah, things are grinding to a halt down in Frankfort, but it wasn't solely David Williams. You know, Greg Stumbo does his own bit of grinding things to a halt down there. And, you know, something as no-brainer as hemp, that the Courier-Journal wrote a huge article about how industrial hemp is the great unifier, great political unifier, that Republicans, Democrats, independents, we all agree industrial hemp is good. The polls show that the overwhelming majority of Kentuckians support industrial hemp. That something so unifying politically can be dragged to a halt by the Democrat establishment that controls the state house is an example of what's wrong at the national level as well. No one's having a real conversation here. Nobody's actually trying to solve problems. It's all about protecting and expanding political fiefdoms. It's not about solving problems. And the only way we're ever going to get out of this problem at this point is for the voters to stand up and say no more. Look at your representative. Look at your senator, both at the state level and at the national level. And ask yourself, look at their record, ask yourself, are they working to make things better? Are they just doing whatever the party tells them to do? Or are they actually one of the people leading the party, whatever party they are, to be obstructionist for the sake of obstructionism, not because there's a legitimate debate here? I mean, yeah, you know what, the industrial hemp thing, that thing got beat to death, and still they were going to try to kill it. If there's a legitimate debate, then have it. But once the debate's over and the public's behind it and it's very obvious that it's the right thing to do, do it. That's all. You need to figure out which of your reps, which of your senators, again, state or national level, are not operating that way. If they're operating in a way that's all about protecting their political power, all about protecting their little fiefdom, whether it's theirs or they're a part of somebody else's, then they need to go, period. Because we don't need followers. We don't need marching orders people. We need people that are going to go to Frankfort and to D.C. and do what's best for all of us, which oftentimes is just getting out of the way, but do what's best for all of us, not what's best for their political future, not what's best for their fiefdom. That's the mindset that's got to – that's what's got to change, and that's the mindset in the voters that has to change. You know, I've met a number of my elected officials and elected officials around the state, and you know what? A lot of them are genuinely nice people. And that's great. But nice guys are not necessarily who we want. You know, during the big debate we had over the bailouts of the banks, one of the loudest opponents to that was Jim Bunning. Now, anybody who knows Jim Bunning will tell you, Jim Bunning's kind of a jerk. And that's okay, because you know what? He was a loud voice that stood up and said, no, don't bail out the banks. I respected him for doing that. I thought that was great, because unlike our other senator at the time, and still Senator McConnell, he went out there and did what the people were screaming from the rooftops. And again, that's another issue that was a political unifier. The left, the right, independents, nobody wanted to bail out the banks. Nobody wanted that. And so he went out there and said, hey, no. McConnell, getting tired of all the phone calls, just turned his phones off in his office. You tell me, who's in touch with the people? Who's looking out for the interests of the people rather than their own political fiefdom? And I think people are waking up to this. I mean, McConnell, in all these theoretical matchups that are out there for 2014, I have not seen one yet where he has crossed 50% of the public support. And that's not good news for an incumbent. And certainly he's going to have money, and he's going to have the ability to try to change your mind through an ad blitz. My hope is that you and others like you out there, other voters, see through it. My hope is that we start getting people that actually represent us, the people, cut through the political BS and start saying this is what we want. And we have some of those people out there, but there are also people in their leadership and their party that keep those people from being as effective as they could be. So that's the fight we've got to fight. That's what we've got to push. But, folks, that's the end of the show. We're out of time for the week. I want to thank you for tuning in. Tune in again next week, same time, 7 o'clock. Tune into the shows the rest of the week. This has been Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Good week.